space for Taurus in Taurus Rising. This is the 2023 annual edition of Planet Waves. I'm not sure if the 24th or 25th annual edition. What's the difference? Thank you for joining me. And what I'd like to do in this reading is basically just take a more informal, break it down kind of approach to your astrology. The written presentations are a little more formal, and you get a certain level of factual detail. And by the way, those written readings are intended to be printed and taken ownership of, rather than read on the screen. The way I envision them being used is printed out, three-hole punched, or put in your journal and scribbled on, and fully made your own as a kind of a starting point for a 2023 astrology notebook or spiritual notebook. Before I go further and talk about your astrology, and there's lots of fun stuff to talk about, I want to acknowledge, as few people seem to be doing, the astoundingly stressful times that we are in, and the pain of being messed with, abused by large forces in society, many of whose names we don't know, and the way this has percolated down to every last person on the planet. We see the numbers of the mental health situations and the overdoses and the alcoholism and the suicides and all these horrible things that you can read about in news reports, and yet there's never the connection made that everyone is going through this. We've all suffered losses and had people and things and privileges and basic things we might have taken for granted, like our jobs and family members, divided against us, taken away from us, and we're left to basically sweep the pieces back together and go forward with life. And I feel how challenging this is and how different the world feels. That said, let's catch you up with the kind of big news of your astrology. There's a few major points in there, and one that I'm not sure I've explained this well enough for Taurus, but it sure is interesting, and it is about the fundamental tension that has been driving the story of your life forward in this accelerated way over the past few years. And there are two factors that I think are primarily involved. And the first one is Uranus in Taurus. So this is something that happens for 7 years out of every 84 years. So there's people who never even experience it. There's Tauruses who never experience it, or you experience it when you're, 6 years old and don't really know what it's about or have a sense what it's about. And this began in 2018. And what is so kind of all by itself, what is so odd about it is that Taurus is the rock of stability in the zodiac. Taurians are the people that we count on to always be there, and who we expect to be living in the same place. Many of them do for decades sometimes. It's like no point in moving. And as I once joked, you don't need a new radio. Your old radio is just as good. So Taurus wants the old world to be there. I know Capricorn gets a lot of credit for this. I'm going to talk a lot about Capricorn a little bit later on in this kind of monologue, which you can make a dialogue by writing to me. And Uranus completely upends the concept of Taurus as this rock of stability. I think that in the most recent round, the events of late 2017 and 2018, right around the time that Taurus took on Uranus as a kind of a new visitor, are where this problem with culture-wide instability really got a foothold. Now, we can go back to 2015 and 2016 and the disaster of the 2016 election and all of that, but that's relatable to this. But Uranus and Taurus starts in 2018, and it really destabilizes many people and things and traditions and customs and expectations and protocols that need to be there. We need those things. We need our traditions, and we need our people who are not migratory and who, you know, stick to one thing for a long time. And you need stability. But the thing with Taurus is that sometimes it can get a little too stable and too attached. So anyway, attached to the way things are, attached to the past, attached to certain customs, and that's, you know, it's a little bit, there's kind of an edge there. But when we add Uranus to Taurus, that definitely is going to be about shaking the tree, updating the files, and kind of injecting, probably not the best word, your energy field with the modern world, which is typically not the thing that you're that interested in. Everybody, many people are all about new. And you're like, like my house, like my old couch. And so the first thing we get with Uranus and Taurus is a kind of a rebellious quality. There's there's rebellious, there's let's catch up with all that we haven't done, and there's some setting aside of the obsession with morals and ethics that are usually phony. Now, it is vitally important, and I think I make this point in your written reading, that you have a code that you live by, that you have rules of travel, that you have a way to make substantial your personal policy of respect and of making amends when you have harmed someone and all of that. But the short of it is that Uranus is there, and Uranus is shaking the tree, and it is rebellious, and it is energetic, and it is reminding you that there is a lot to catch up with, whether you like it or not, and whether you choose to do so or not. And it can be destabilizing. At the same time, for the past 3 years, and for approximately the next 3 months, Saturn has been working its way across the 10th place in your chart. That's Aquarius, and that is a house that essentially is about authority. It's also about reputation, and it's about one's highest aspirations, and it's about one's goals, and it's a number of things. But we get really is our relationship to power in the 10th. And it's very much associated with family. It is the house involving the mother. And so with Saturn going through here, and I believe, as does Isabel Hickey, that Saturn is in many manifestations a feminine influence. It is the ego formation influence. It is in the life of a child, It is the mother's job to take the child out to the edge of the garden wall and teach the child how to properly construct its ego and to be polite and to be respectful. And then we go past the garden wall, and usually that's supposed to be the job of the father in Western society, to take us out of the immediate constraints and boundaries that define the household. So the 10th, I think, is a maternal influence. We can reconcile that with Aquarius. It's an interesting combination of factors. But Saturn has been present. And there has been a kind of a squeeze of authority. And what is interesting is it is a squeeze of authority that is coming both from social culture, Aquarius, and from Saturn, some embodiment of social culture that may also manifest in the form of governmental authority and family authority, though those only get their power when there is a social agreement to follow along. And whatever the scenario may have been in your life, there has been a lot of pressure coming from above, a lot of reconciling with power being wielded by society. And I recognize that a lot of people haven't given it that name, because before they gave it that name, they gave it an excuse for being. Oh, it's okay. It's whatever it is, it's fine, because, well, you know. However, you have had this influence, this authority influence coming through your seventh with the mighty power of Saturn in Aquarius, combined with the influence of Uranus and Taurus. These have made a series of squares between each other. That's a very high tension square. The square in some ways is still extant as long as, you know, one planet's in one sign, the other planet's in the other sign. You're in the waning side of it. But if you're wondering what the, like, kind of push me, pull you going on within yourself is, Uranus is wanting to burst out and be free and just say, yeah, enough of the rules. And Saturn, coming in at a right angle to that, is saying, rules, rules, rules. You must be right. You must do this the correct way. You must honor and respect authority. And so this is quite a lot of tension to hold in one's body. Taurus can do it because, you know, you have this deep inner core that in a way is more like Uranus, and yet you've long been able to contain your fiery, rebellious qualities, which they come through at certain times, and now may be one of them. So what changes in 2023 is that Pluto moves in to Aquarius just as Saturn is moving out of Aquarius and into Pisces. And it's going to take Pluto a year and a half to fully land in Aquarius. It's going to enter Aquarius three times. This is the first time in living memory that Pluto is going to make three ingresses rather than the usual two, i.e. it enters, it retrogrades, it goes in to stay. Now it's going to go in, retrograde out, go forward, enter, retrograde back, and then enter to stay in late 2024. So there's a fortunately, a transitional phase, and then Pluto sticks around for another 20 years. So Pluto is going to cover the same territory that Saturn has just covered, only with Pluto, we get a unvarnished expression of power, right? Saturn is more negotiable. There are boundaries. You know what they are. Pluto can blow the boundaries away, can break all the rules. We saw Pluto in action at the time that the World Trade Center fell down. Whatever did that, whatever device or chemical or airplane or whatever plan did that. The World Trade Center falling down was the product of Saturn and Pluto in a face-to-face meeting. And so if you're wondering how powerful these influences could be, that is a clue about it. And so what you learned going through the past 3 years here, starting approximately in March of 2020, incredibly, that's when Saturn enters Aquarius, in March of 23. Now that spiritual material, those lessons, that whole body of experience is now going to take on very important added meaning, because Pluto is essentially going to ramp up the power. And here you and we have a few different options for how this might manifest. And if you happen to have access to the Aries reading, I gave a long and impassioned plea at the beginning as a statement of intent that I will summarize here, that there are several different ways to take Pluto. And one of them is as a manifestation of raw, brutal, unethical, or amoral power. And the other is a more spiritualizing influence that helps us go forward and make progress in our lives. And to learn and to grow and to cultivate contact with this thing that we call soul, this elusive thing, which I believe is a learning process. It's an experiential process. It's not a material thing or even a thought form. It's more of a commitment to building oneself and seeking understanding of oneself. So Pluto enters this realm, and this is going to put you into a relationship with authority in a completely new way and different way than you've ever experienced. And by the way, Pluto hasn't been back to Aquarius since something like 1777. Pluto entered Aquarius in 1777, and it worked its way across for 20 years, which is what it does. And this was during the era of the creation and ratification of the United States Constitution in the very late 18th century, approximately the last 20 years of the 18th century. So it was a revolutionary era, and I think that some progress was made. And here we go again. Now, the theme of digital manifests several different crucial ways in your chart. And I am of the persuasion, from much study of life and the advance of technology and the philosophies of Marshall McLuhan, that we have become a completely transformed society of completely transformed beings because of the total immersion of society in digital technology in every single facet of our lives, bar none, and what this has done to us as people and as a culture. And Aquarius has a lot to do with the advent of technology, as well as with pattern formation, social pattern formation. And so you are someone who tends to need stable social patterns. To an extent, we all do, but you're a fixed sign, and you've got the fixed sign Aquarius in a very prominent place, and your 10th place. And Pluto is about to come and do several things. One is going to raise the power level very rapidly. Second thing it's going to do is it's going to once again rip through the social fabric of society. The social fabric meaning the patterns of society that have formed. And at the same time, it is likely to intensify the pattern formation process. This is speaking collectively. Now, individually, we basically get a few options with Pluto and Aquarius, but I think that that the most essential question comes down to who is willing to stand up to the collective and actually be yourself and express your values. And we have had quite a test of this the past 3 years of Saturn and Aquarius, and we have seen that there are relatively few people who are willing to open their mouth and tell the truth about how they feel or what they think, who are willing to risk their friendships. And you are going to be in a position of being an exemplar. That's what it means to have something going on in your 10th house, is that you teach, and you teach by example, fundamentally by example, and will confront this in one way or another in a much deeper way than you did the past 3 years. Because the past 3 years were Saturn, and Saturn is a mild and benefic influence in Aquarius, compared to the neither specifically benefic nor malefic influence of Pluto. You just take it on your level, and it's going to be there for a long time. And any transit to the 10th has a way of putting you in the spotlight. And you, I don't think, are someone who likes the spotlight or likes to be involved in collective activity as much as you are drawn to it, drawn to a kind of leadership. But I would suggest that with the ingress of Pluto here, that the spiritual level of this, meaning the what is actually true about me and about the world level, is going to be impossible to miss. And the thing with Pluto is that it can work unconsciously, or you can choose a more Chiron-styled approach and have it work as a fully conscious factor. And you know that you're growing and learning with Pluto when you invest yourself in making the process fully aware and fully conscious. This journey, this whatever it is that Pluto is doing, I think the idea is to raise it up to awareness and see and feel and experience this thing for what it is. And because it's Aquarius, the place you're likely to have that experience first is in what you witness and experience socially, and because Aquarius is your 10th, what you are called to do professionally, and then in any and all of your interactions with authority figures of any and every stripe. All right, let's take a little break, and then I will come back and let's talk about Aries and Mars. Astrology we're doing involves the use of the solar chart, and far from being this like substitute for real astrology, I think the solar chart is one of the most beautiful ways that we can find out what the signs are really about. I have a whole concept for a book called Sun Sign, Moon Sign, where I kind of update the files, pick up where Linda Goodman left off. But for now, I bring these teachings to the annual readings. And I've written many times and will say again that one of the defining features of Taurus is that Aries is the sign before yours. Now, that's just a simple fact, right? Aries comes before Taurus in the alphabet of the zodiac. But the special, let's say, condition of Aries being the sign before yours means that it is a 12th house influence. This is true whether you're Taurus rising or Taurus sun. Aries is the zone right before the one where you're like fully and consciously you, which is Taurus. And I think that this creates a tension because Aries, in my view, of the solar chart and really of all personal astrology, is the place where you seek to be yourself. Aries, wherever Aries lands in a chart, and you can test this out for yourself, just look at your chart and find out what house Aries is associated with if you're, you know, different from, you know, Taurus rising, that Aries is the place where we do our most significant self-seeking and self-expression. And so this talks about why Scorpios have such a strong affinity for work and take such pride in their work and a number of other different factors. And to have this fundamental sign of self and self-expression and self-actualization in the 12th house is challenging because the 12th is where things disappear. And so you can live with this sense that you have disappeared, but because the 12th has the property of things disappearing, you might not say, oh, well, I'm on this quest for myself that I don't know that I'm on, unless, of course, you read astrology and you happen to have access to this concept. So the tension there is the sense of searching for something that you may not be aware that you're searching for. Where you get kind of perked up and have your attention focused is when there can be major transit activity in Aries. Just so happens that there is major transit activity in Aries. And the current star of the show in Aries is Chiron. And so Chiron in the 12th in Aries can manifest as this very persistent self-seeking, wanting to plumb the mysteries of yourself, wanting to understand what you're made of, wanting to make contact with something that you may feel like you've missed. And because Chiron is there, it is powering up the questioning aspect, right? Chiron focuses as much energy as the sun does, but it focuses it in a way that is less obvious and more gradually driven forward by certain kinds of crises, healing crises, and various other kinds of things that seem to be annoyances, perhaps, or they seem to be things that have come up unexpectedly that don't necessarily seem like they're very helpful. So you're in this special time, and this is a 9-year transit right about at the middle of this. So there's about 4 more years to go of Chiron in Aries. And Chiron in Aries is following up on a century of Eris in Aries. And Eris in Aries, in my reading, is the influence of the electrical environment on self-concept. And the problem with the electrical environment and its influence on self-concept is that the primary effect of electricity, by which I mean light bulbs, telephones, all other forms of electrical communication, including television and radio and the internet, is to render people feeling insignificant. It's very hard to feel significant. Much of what you see going on in the world, particularly on the internet and on television, is people in this kind of desperate quest to be relevant or to at least experience themselves as relevant. And it is so in our faces all the time that it's even difficult to recognize this. But if you look at social media, subscribe to a few Substacks, it's almost like everyone who's participating in these things is trying to get noticed and be the one, not necessarily because they have something productive to offer, but because they desperately need to experience themselves in some form as meaningful. Chiron is coming through this zone and helping us put these pieces together, helping us raise awareness of the problem and helping us get involved in an actual process of self-rationalization, self-actualization. See, it is both actually, right? Because we've got the internet. It is exactly what this quest for relevance, this desperate quest for relevance is about, is self-rationalization. Yeah, I'm really, I'm worthy of you reading me 14 times a day. Forget the fact that I'm just, you know, reprinting things that everyone else has said and haven't actually found out any of this myself. But you're going to know it's from me, and you're going to notice me, and you're going to give me $5 and so forth and so on. Now comes Jupiter. Chiron is here to help us put this back together, to address this from a healing and self-actualization viewpoint. And Jupiter is here to provide substance, energy, wisdom. Jupiter's got a lot of mass. All except for the other ice giants and gas giants, if you swept up all the other planets and asteroids and Kuiper belts in the solar system, they would maybe make a little puddle at the bottom of Jupiter. And so Jupiter carries a huge amount of mass. Mass is energy. We really do live in the E equals MC squared world, and all of that mass is bringing in energy and momentum and gravitas and weight and a sense of being. Now, I would suggest drawing on this like a well cared for trust fund, rather than splurging all at once or filling yourself up with meaning. Allow the combination of Jupiter and Chiron to teach you how to find your relevance. I mean, I think it's, Maslow talked about this. I mean, right in the hierarchy of needs, right under food and air and a bed to sleep in is the need for people to be in some way socially significant. Now, you're not going to have this problem with Aquarius being so prominent, and we'll get to Saturn too. Saturn's emphasizing many of the same things. But it's possible to have a kind of an inflammation reaction to this. And so this is why I'm suggesting, rather than going at Jupiter like turning on a gushing faucet, that you kind of take spoonfuls of this and apply it homeopathically or in the style of Chiron as well, and let these influences teach you how to find your sense of meaning, and then do this very important thing of expressing your sense of meaning. Now, by the way, I mean, there are going to be some people who respond to Pluto in Aquarius, especially if they have it so personally placed in their chart, meaning in an angular house, who take this as an invitation to dominate, to completely dominate. You're more likely to have to do something about them, laugh at them, adapt to them, stand up to them, relate to them, whoever those them might be. Most of them live in Davos in Switzerland, or answer to the main office in Davos. But all that public stuff aside, this is magnificent astrology for self-actualization. Now, there is an extension of Aries, that being Mars. Mars is the ruling planet of Aries, and Mars is in interesting condition as the year begins. Mars is retrograde. It is retrograde in Gemini, which doesn't happen very often. Mars retrograde doesn't happen very often. Mars retrograde in Gemini happens far, far less often. And the unusual thing about this Mars retrograde is that it is making a series of squares to Neptune. So here again, we have a picture of this relevance issue. The picture of the relevance issue is that the square aspect of Mars to Neptune can have this way of dissolving the power of self. It can have this way of making you feel like all of that Martian energy that should be saying, me, 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 saying, who, me, what am I about? Or worse yet, you forget. Now, the thing about the position of Mars in your solar chart is it's in Gemini right now. And I think that the real sense of your own power that you can have, if you want to feel like you belong here and you've got a grip and your life means something, is to take up the power of decision and the power of prioritization and this crucial question of what you do with your resources. And those resources come in every form in the second house. They are your resources. They are your talents, your abilities, your tools of the trade, your personal assets, and how you feel about yourself. And so you've got Mars, which is the ruling planet of like your secret self in the 12th house, expressing itself currently in the second house, which is in itself a place where you decide if you matter. And the question is, how do you actually get to a place where you feel some relevance? And I will suggest here that it has nothing to do with the outer world. It has nothing to do with anyone affirming that your life is meaningful or relevant, but rather your conscious choice to make decisions, your search for your values and your ethics and your quest to reconcile what appears to be a split in your values and your ethics, signified by the presence of Gemini on the house of values and ethics, where there's always two distinct sides to the story. There's always a kind of an argument going on in Gemini. Or there's one side expressed and one side concealed, or they take turns expressing and concealing. So Mars is moving through here to stitch these different sides together, to bring together this twin paradox within you. And remember that Mars rules Aries, and in Aries, we've got a lot of activity. We've got Chiron and Eris and Jupiter coming through in Aries. And there's also a third point in Aries, probably several others, but with the ones I'm working with, is that there is a point here called Salacia, which is your own evaluation of what is sexually appropriate. Most people would say that that's an oxymoron. There's no sexually appropriate. especially now, where society is in this phony love affair with the LGBTQ caucus and experiencing a massive inflammation of heterophobia, where we have fully embraced as a society how being nice, being polite, expressing interest is a form of assault. This is one of the most horrendous expressions of the digital age, and it was pretty bad before the digital age. But now we're taking this to all extremes. We're in the digital age, it's like every person is the embodiment of the seven deadly sins. That is ridiculous. It is simply wrong in my evaluation, and it's impossible. It can't be true. But because of the current state of Aquarius laying all this heavy bullshit on us all the time and making us feel as if we are wrong no matter what, and I'm seeing this in a thousand different ways. You need, as part of your self-actualization process, in my opinion, to make your own assessment of what is appropriate and what is not, what is right and what is wrong, how you wish to be treated, regardless of what the prevailing rules of society are saying. If you think it's cool that someone looks at you and gives you a saucy glance and a wolf whistle, that's how you live. And you are the king or queen of your consciousness, of your life, of your relationship to the wider world around you. It is not up to others to tell you what is right for you. It's not up to you to tell others what is right for them unless it directly, not indirectly, impacts you. And so Salacia, which will be taking a conjunction from Jupiter first thing, sometime probably in February or sooner, will give you a chance to raise that question. Then Jupiter conjunct Chiron in April. Then Jupiter conjunct, let's get the dates on these while this is so significant. So let's see. I can't do Salacia, but I can tell you. Hold on. I'm going to pause this so you don't have to listen to me click and tick here, and I'll be right back. Okay. Jupiter conjunct Salacia, the theme of you determining what is appropriate for you, and Salacia is going to be in Aries forever, like 20 more years. No. Come back here. Jupiter. 7. Okay, February 5th, around Imbolc. Right around the Candlemas feast in February. In my mind, there is such a thing. The February cross quarter. Then aspects Jupiter conjunct Chiron takes place March 12. And then Jupiter conjunct Eris takes place April 23rd. And then something exciting happens. Jupiter enters your sign. And let's talk about that in the third segment of this reading. Back in a bit. Okay, so one of the most fun things going on right now for you is, it's not yet, but it'll be soon. And I don't think Jupiter in Aries is going to be meekly disappointing for you, because it's going to help you find substance in a place that can be frustratingly insubstantial, right? The metaphysical question of Aries in the 12th is, do I exist? Well, yeah. But do you feel like it all the time? Well, no. But Chiron's helping. Chiron's providing some provocation. You may find it annoying, but nonetheless, it's there. Jupiter is going to help provide substance in there. But on May 16, Jupiter enters your sign. And there's hardly a day when you could say this is not a helpful influence. I don't know what it would take, but basically, though it's not that easy to like look at something and say, ah, that's a good aspect. Well, probably so with Jupiter entering your sign. It is going to continue to provide you with a sense of your inherent being, a sense of your belonging and your feeling, right around the time of your birthday, feeling good about yourself, Jupiter. In Taurus, that lasts a year. And so there will not be an in and out of Taurus between Aries and Taurus, and it's going to go straight into Gemini. So you get that uninterrupted, solid 1 year, plus a conjunction of Jupiter conjunct Uranus. And this is the time to plan a big party. I'll tell you the date for that. Jupiter conjunct Uranus takes place on, it's in 2024, April 20th, 2024, the day of the ingress of, the day after the ingress of Taurus into your sign in 2024. That all said, that's in the future. Let's return to a theme of the theme of moralism that I brought up, and this obscenely moralistic perspective that society has taken, where everyone just about thinks it's their prerogative to decide what's right for everyone else, and with the underlying message being, you are going to take my medicine and you're going to like it. That alone, anybody who's ever studied medicine, not like MD medicine, like Native medicine, indigenous medicine, any branch of shamanism, to impose one's medicine on another person against their will is one of the ultimate breaches of the Dharma. Now, we are at the end of Pluto in Capricorn. Pluto has spent about 15 years working its way through Capricorn. This has been one heck of a dismantling of your previous moral construct, and largely your mother's moral construct, because the ninth is always about the unresolved material of the mother, especially the late ninth, where Pluto is right now in your solar chart, or in your whole sign house chart if you're Taurus rising. And so the fact that Uranus has arrived in your sign at the end of all this, toward the end of all this deconstruction of all of this religiosity and all this stuff that these people from the 19th and 20th centuries gave to us, is kind of a reward for that, for having gone through this gradual, at times very rapid, process of dismantling the not necessarily helpful apparatus of religion that was imposed on you. Now, one thing that's so interesting is that there are early in Capricorn some very, very powerful influences, and I probably mentioned these in the written. I'm not sure if I did. It's very difficult to describe, but I see it this way. First of all, you recognize that there is a need for an actual moral and ethical structure to work within, and that the structure must be flexible, and that whatever like wreckage or kind of crust of the past that our ancestors left us with, the rubble to crawl out of, that there is actual wisdom to be gained from being in direct contact with your ancestors and their teachings, not merely the caricature version of that. And I view the caricature version as most forms of religion, which is not really religion. Mostly it's just religiosity. It's the pretense of religion. And Jung, somewhere back there, said that religion is the substitute for religious experience. Right? You read through the Bible. Ooh, you know, John the Diviner, he had a big religious experience. We'll make that a religion. Ezekiel, oh, wow, he saw the flying saucer. Make that a religion. Moses sees the burning bush. Make that a religion. These other people are having the religious experiences, and we get moralism and mythology. Well, this combination of factors, early in Capricorn, in your chart is saying, go for the experience. Have the experience. Don't worry about what the thing you're supposed to think or say or do is about. Okay, so bearing that in mind, and these are long transits, and one thing I can say is that you are likely to have some company here. Described by Cupido, it's a hypothetical planet that is... thankfully, I think providing a more accessible and social side to this combination of factors. I'm just going to put a light green circle around them and write that it's Pholus, Quaoar, Ixion, and Cupido. So you can see what I'm talking about here. There, I've written this in green pencil. This is saying have the experience. Don't let other people have the experience for you. Go to the place. Find out what it's about. If you're curious about something, go digging for the truth. Don't let someone else figure out the truth for you. There's no such thing as a truth that somebody figures out for you. People can show you the way. They can hand you certain keys and you know, describe the territory to some real extent. But you actually have to make the theoria yourself. And there's this very kind of exciting journey back to your deep ancestral roots. And by the way, Chiron in Aries is doing the same thing. Now, one last transit here in terms of talking about ancestral roots. One of the very cool things about 2023 is the once per 8 year visitation of Venus to Leo in retrograde. In some of my previous analyses, I skipped the most recent one, but it's about every 8 years. Venus is very regular in its visits to signs in retrogrades. And the one 8 years ago, I think, began in Virgo, which is why I might not have seen it. In any event, there's another ancestral house, the fourth. And this is also the house of home and your security. And when we look at the solar chart, and this is one of the reasons why I think it's such a brilliant device, is that there's always things in the solar chart that give us another picture of what we're supposed to think about that sign or what is actually true about that sign. So something about Taurus and home and grounding is a real thing. But we see that expressed most vividly as Leo in the fourth. I'm going to circle that in green also. Well, it's number four there. And your home is where you feel the best. It should be. I mean, you may be a wanderer or traveler of some kind, particularly with all this ninth house stuff going on. But home is home. It needs to be home and should always be home. Venus retrograde is going to help you feel that. It's going to help you ground into your space and I think find some peace of mind in your space, and more than peace of mind, kind of a peace, P-E-A-C-E, of emotional grounding. Now, there may be some things to revisit. It's a retrograde. There may be some people to reconcile with. There may be some understanding that you need to gain, reconciling with the past and all of that stuff. But Venus in Leo is really one of those feel-good transits that you can do a lot more with than that, that you really can build upon. Now, Venus usually blows through a sign in 3 weeks or something, four weeks on average. Here, it's going to stay around for 4 months. It arrives in June, and it stays through October. So it's June, July, August, September, 4 months. So it's June 5 through October 8. The total duration in the retrograde, sorry, I misread. The retrograde itself is July 22nd through September 12th, but the total span is early June through early October. So that's the peak of summer and lovely part of autumn, and a great time to love your home and your garden and whatever else, and to feel the wealth that really is about the lives that we live. I mean, you know, I live in a modest apartment filled with a lot of recording gear and books and things like that. And nothing special. It's just a nice place to live. But I was noticing last night, I wanted to take a bath. I do that every now and then. I'm like thinking, the ability to fill a bathtub up with hot water, clean hot water, and to lock the door and just hang out with myself for an hour in peace was, till very recently, the domain of a prince. Right? Imagine the 18th century. Yeah, princes are still shitting in chamber pots. The richest people in the world don't have toilet bowls. And there's probably 100 things you can list about your life that would be quite princely or princessly. And that, I think, is the message of Venus retrograde in Leo. And Venus, of course, is the planet that rules your sign. So it's really about being at home. And there's another thing in here about making sure that your home workspace is really, really nice. Because Libra, the other Venus ruled sign, is on the 6th. And I'll remind you, another message from the solar chart, another message from the most brilliant invention in all of astrology, the solar chart. You must always work in a beautiful place. There must be light. There must be good air. There must be, if there's other people, a sense of congeniality and not of conflict. And the ability to do a very Libra thing, which is to actually express your talent in a loving and creative way. Okay, once again, signing off on a chilly, damp New York early winter night here on the eve of the Capricorn new moon. Thank you again for your time and your trust and your investment in Planet Waves. And you should know that I am available if you need me. Bye for now. Thank you.
Oh.